welcome to Cloudlandia.
Well, I certainly feel welcome.
That's good.
Yes, and I have a question for you right off the bat, a little bit
farther. Okay.
You were granted 6 more Jackson units last night for this day, and I just hope you didn't waste them.
I have put them on layaway. I have set them aside, and yeah. I'm consciously choosing not to use them yet.
But you will have them in the future.
I've got them banked. Yes.
You got them banked. Yes. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not going to cash them in now because this is something that I would gladly, if it's in my normal allocation. So I'm happy to be here.
Talk about the power of Cloudlandia. Friday afternoon, you and I were on a podcast, a live podcast.
A very big Zoom, yes.
Joe, and from the time we started until the time we finished, we went up 9 points on Kindle. We went from number 39 to number 30 on Kindle.
Oh, that's great news.
Isn't that great? I mean, but it's interesting because Kindle is sort of Cloudlandia. I mean, that's
it really is.
Purchasing of books in Cloudlandia, and podcasts are in Cloudlandia.
Yes.
And we were from all over, and, you know, we were, you and Ben were probably the closest. You're just miles apart.
That's true. Ben and I were at least in the same, we could drive to each other. That's right.
Your GPS was close to his GPS. But it was really great. And then I did one with Nick Nanton, and he was close by too.
Who I can also drive to. Yeah.
Yeah. He's very far. And we did a great podcast after that, a live podcast, but I didn't see the numbers, but, we're doing well. Yeah. We're doing well.
I bet.
This one. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's such a great concept that people immediately get when you hear the words.
It's almost like a digital concept, you know. It's almost like a digital concept. The moment I say who, not how, those words mean something to somebody. You know, everybody knows what who means. Everybody knows what not means. Everybody knows what how means. And their brain just instantly says, oh, right. Oh, wow. Yeah, right. So anyway, it's really, really interesting that it's just like that. And I was looking at some of the chat comments, and people said, oh, golly, wow, you know, like that. It's kind of like a surprise.
Yeah. And it's an insight that once you get it, you get it. You know, it's one of those things like, I was thought about Jamie Smart had a book called Clarity. And once you get the thought of clarity, that it's, you get it. There's nothing, you don't have to discipline yourself to remember anything or go through any kind of protocol to arrive at clarity. You understand that you have it. And this concept is one of those things that it's actually a directive in the question, right? Who, not how. It's a directive and a question at the same time, and which is really
interesting. Yeah, the interesting thing, you know, and we should explore this a little bit. That once you get something, you can't unget it.
That's exactly right. You're changed by it once you know.
Yeah.
Uh huh. It's true. Yeah. And that's what I mean about one of those books. Now, you know, one of the things that I was trying to get people to do when they're writing books, because, you know, we have our 90-minute book service that helps people birth books. And one of the things that we get, one of the things that's the biggest advantage is getting the title right. And having a title that, you know, is crystal clear, that you get what it's about. There's no wondering what the 4-hour work week is about or what financial peace is about. And I think Who Not How falls into this category of doing it is what it says on the tin kind of thing.
Yeah, it was really interesting book titles. First of all, I just checked on Kindle and we were sort of a hot book for the week. So we were in the top 10 for the week. In other words, we had emerged from nowhere and gotten somewhere in a week. And I was just looking at the 10 covers of the other books, and Who Not How just came off like a neon sign, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like Who Not How. And Tucker Max's team at Scribe did it. And I said, gee, that's just such a great way, because you can screw it up. You can, you know, I mean, if you write it in a sentence, at first I had it almost like it was a single term, you know, who, not, how, with no punctuation in between.
Right.
But they just did who at the top, not in the middle, and how at the bottom.
Yeah.
And it just sort of pops out. The blue was great. It was a color of yellow orange on a very nice blue, and it just popped off. You know, it was it was really terrific. Yeah,
and some perfect symmetry, right? Three letter, you know, a nine word title or nine letter title.
But who is just how spelled back? Well, I mean, it's got the same letters. It's got the same letters. You know, who, not, how. It's the same.
Yeah,
letters.
Yeah,
yeah. So anyway. You know, it doesn't feel like a tsunami, but it feels like really big waves.
Yes. I get it. So it's all, it's very, that's very exciting. And that's, I think I was trying to think about the, you know, the essence of what that is. I don't know what the right word for, I'm thinking about now, Cloudlandia and the operating principles of Cloudlandia, or the things that are different in Cloudlandia. And, you know, who, not, how is certainly one of the fundamental things that when you're tapped into, when you're tapped into the network, you're tapped into, you know, unlimited capability on demand at scale. And that's really what, you know, from the littlest thing, it's really just about training yourself, you know. Like I get to the point where whenever I even just researching something or looking at something, you know, I was doing kind of researching, as I mentioned, about the Welcome to America sort of pamphlet that would be handed to people coming through Ellis Island. I saw that on a documentary.
I read it. It's a beautiful thing. You sent it to me last week, and I just read
it. But how
it.
I got to that.
I mean, they should do this. Right now, when people check in, you know, I mean, you still have immigrants, you know, that pamphlet, it could be reproduced today and given out. And a little bit, you know, there's a bit of adjustment to from 1917 language to 2020 language, but not much.
Yeah. And I was thinking about I saw that on a documentary that Philip and I are watching at lunches now, a series called The Story of Us, which is the story of America.
Which is interesting because us could be the United States.
That's what it is. Yeah.
I mean, and, U.S.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. Right. That's funny. So I saw that there was, they would talk about, they did have an excerpt from a pamphlet that was distributed to people arriving on Ellis Island. And so using who, not how in my thought process, just installing this capability. I mentioned Get Magic as one of my capabilities that I have access on tap. So excuse me, rather than me using any of my units of time to go and find, because your thought is, well, how can I find that online? And instead going, I've got magic and I can instruct magic to say, I sent them one text that said, hello, magic. I've heard there was some sort of handbook or Welcome to America guide for immigrants arriving at Ellis Island in the 1800s. Would you please spend up to 1 hour to see if you can find a PDF of this or any article that may talk more about it? So that set them off into finding it. And one of the things that came back was the one that I sent you, and they've sent me since more. And it's pretty interesting to see what you can get, you know, in that you, what you can get for the amount of time. It only took me less than one Jackson unit to get the leverage of six Jackson units. You know, we're at least at you know, at the gravity. This is where I'm exploring, Dan, is this the principles of Cloudlandia, that just like we talked about on the Zoom, that gravity is different, the gravitational pull.
Here's using my own experience to judge your project. I would get real interested in this, and I would start looking, and I'd be at 2 hours, 3 hours, 5 hours, and I said, oh, it's not worth it.
Exactly. And that's the thing.
In other words, I would waste 5 hours and then not get what I was looking for. But
right.
You use 10 minutes, and you got more than you were looking for.
Right. And I've also, though, had situations where they've come up dry, too. And it's better that they spend an hour and come up dry than me. Like you just said, Dan, I would have a tendency to not give up after the first hour, but I would keep going, and all of a sudden we're 3 hours into it. That I'd rather have them know, you know, come to the point that it's not going to be easy. And either way, what they've given me is now a head start that I'm going to have a much more fruitful 2 hours if I decide to go further, because I've got a head start of all of the initial stuff, the surface stuff.
Well, it's interesting, but certainly who, not how, you know, who, not how is certainly, but I was thinking, you know, I was just kind of preparing my mind for our podcast this week, and I said, and I was looking at the Zoom numbers, you know, which are now over 400 million daily users. And I said, I've got a hunch here. You know, there's no way to prove it. Absolutely. I don't think magic will find the numbers for this. But I have a feeling that the people who were good with mainland teamwork are also really, really good with a Cloudlandia collaboration. And if you weren't good with mainland teamwork, you wouldn't even adapt to Cloudlandia, because your attitude towards other people's abilities in the mainland would kind of block you from thinking that there's, you know, some sort of capability that you could take advantage of in Cloudlandia.
Right. But, you know, I think, but the difference is that you're not, in-person teamwork kind of requires proximity and some, which limits, I think, the access to teammates. And that's an interesting thing that this gives you access to the entire world, the whole network instantly. I think, do you remember the Flintstones?
Of
course.
That's almost like an insult.
Do you remember a Gazoo?
You should almost apologize to me for
I'm so sorry, Dan. I'm so sorry. Do you remember the Great Gazoo? that whenever they needed something, they would call on the great Gazoo, and he would there then get them out of a jam or get them the information they needed.
It's really that was I mean, such a great series. You could I mean, I think today the closest we have to those type of animations back in the 50s, 60s is South Park. South Park is the closest to it. And you know, there's an impishness, and you kind of get a feeling that the creators are more in charge of the series than their lawyers.
Yes. Well, but so clever.
I mean, they went 100% for, they went 100% for Biden, for Biden for the election. And so what, you know, I mean, I mean, their creativity with their series and everything. You know, and
well, I saw a 60 Minutes. I saw a 60 Minutes episode with the South Park guys. They actually create the entire show in 6 days. That's why they can seem so topical, like in of the moment. And that was it's a great story for the joy of procrastination, actually, because they were. When they were first doing the show, they would the struggle was to come up with ideas, and they had one time where they needed to come up with an idea. They'd been procrastinating and procrastinating, and then all of a sudden they were really at the last minute, and so they took a story out of the newspaper, like the headlines, what was going on, and they pulled it off in the last.
And then they had their formula,
and it was their most successful shows in this. Well, hold on. If we could just pull things out of the headline, if we could do it this quickly, we'll never be short of ideas again. And that was really the, you know, the 3 years later now or something, I think that they've been going.
Oh,
pretty
crazy,
right?
A lot longer.
South Park has been since 97, I think.
Yeah. So that.
But The Simpsons has been 30 something years, but.
Yeah.
But crazy, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but you have to have some formula that refreshes you on a continual basis. You know, if you don't have a formula that constantly, you know, you have it. But it's very, very interesting. I was reading an article in, it was on Zoom this or on the internet, so it came up to me because I have kind of news, different news networks, not ABC, not NBC, not CBS, none of the mainline, but one of them's called Real Clear Politics, and well, they're a Cloudlandia newspaper. And what they do, they just aggregate the best of the last 24 hours from all the world's press.
Okay. I love that.
And then they don't reproduce anything. They just
link. They aggregate.
Sometimes they don't even reproduce the headline in the newspaper. They'll simply give you the context of what somebody's talking about, and then if you press on it, you go directly to the newspaper. And some of the publications are kind of stupid because they have a firewall. You have to pay to read the article. And I say, what a bummer! They shouldn't allow it. They shouldn't aggregate anybody who comes to them who clicks on Real Clear Politics. That's the name of the. The site that I go to, and it's refreshed. It's refreshed every day except Saturday. So you have a Saturday morning, but you don't get Saturday afternoon. But today I'll get at 3 o'clock this afternoon. They'll refresh their headlines, and then they'll tell me what they had earlier in the day. But here's what I would do. They can do this electronically. The publications, for example, the Washington Post, the New York Times, they say you have to sign up to read this article. And it kind of makes me negative towards them. And they should have an agreement with Real Clear Politics that any link that comes to them from Real Clear Politics is free.
Mm. That would be great.
No, I mean, what would they lose? What would they lose? Mm-hmm. This way, they're just ticking off. It's not like, oh, I really want to read that article. I should take a couple minutes now and sign up for, you know, and get a subscription to this paper. I said, screw them. You know, if I see it's the New York Times, I don't even bother with it. You know, I'm screening out now. And the thing is, the New York Times is arguably one of the most powerful news media in the world. And they have to compete like mad to get one of their headlines on Real Clear Politics. I mean, they're up there with 25 other for the day. And almost never do they have more than one, one article. So here, they're the powerful mainland publication. But in Cloudlandia, they have to wait in line, take a number, and hope they're good for the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I wonder, you know, that's one of the things that's a who, not how principle, you know, I mean, is a tool is curation, aggregation. Yeah. What you're going through right there is your... you know, I subscribe to some newsletters, email newsletters that are like that. And one of my favorite is Next Draft by Dave Pell. And Dave is a guy who, I love the way he talks about it. He describes himself. He says, I am the algorithm. And he says, if you go to his site, he basically says, I wake up every morning. I spend 4 hours looking at, you know, 100 different news sites. And from that, I pluck the 10 most fascinating, articles of the day. And I deliver them to you with a pithy, summary. You know, he does so because here's one, he does his little take on it to set it up, to introduce it, and then link you to the article. And then occasionally, maybe on 50% of them, he will say, and if you want the alternative view on this, and here's another article that goes deeper on this. So 10 basic topics with the main article and then a couple of supporting things. And I look at things like that as a real advantage, a shortcut, because once you have established that trust that he is, you know, I like where he's pointing out kind of thing, that's a real multiplier, a time multiplier.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's we're kind of like in the first century of Gutenberg, you know. I mean, and what I mean, if you're 100 years after Gutenberg, 99% of the neat things you can do with printing still lie in the future.
Well, I realized that when I was looking at that it was 400. Gutenberg had a good long run because it was 400 years before the phonograph, which was the next thing in the advancement of communicating media.
Reproducing something.
Yeah. So he had a 400 year monopoly. But it was really neat to see all the cascading.
It was actually, I think it was 500 because he was 1455, the actual.
Yeah, so 1455, so but it was 1855.
That's right. Yeah, it's 400. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you look at that,
see, together, really, being together, we're always right.
Yeah, together, we're always right. you know, it was really, I'm looking at how things evolved, like out of that seed of the Gutenberg press, the next thing that came was actually newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
Came out of that. That now the ability to print and distribute a daily,
yes,
broadsheet or whatever they are.
Yeah, and you know, just before newspapers started to die, some of them had three editions a day. They'd have morning, early afternoon, and evening. You know, they would have three papers. You know,
yeah.
And, Remember the Globe and Mail when I moved to Toronto in
there were two.
1971. It was the evening newspaper. Globe and Mail was the evening newspaper. It would come out about 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and it was the freshest news because they would catch the news of the day, and a lot of newspapers, when you look back at their history, a lot of them had the word evening before the the name of the
evening news.
The Saturday Evening Post, Evening Standard, the Evening Standard. And then the others were called the morning, you know, they were called the morning. And, you know, so that kind of tells you that they were trying to find their niche from a freshness standpoint. They were trying to,
Well, it's funny, you know, you think about that. We had, that reminded me, in Winter Haven here, in Lakeland is the next town over, which is bigger. Lakeland has the Lakeland Ledger, which is the sort of Polk County newspaper of record. And then Winter Haven has the News Chief, and that's the kind of East Polk County. But the always joke is that the News Chief in the morning, they get their news from the Ledger, and they just report on. They read the Ledger the night before and then make a newspaper that delivers in the next morning.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, it's like it's sort of like Burger King, and it's sort of like CBS. You ask somebody who knows the history of Burger King and the history of CBS, and they said, "Well, how did you do your marketing?" He said, "We waited for McDonald's to do all the marketing, and then we just moved it next to them."
Right, that's smart.
CBS. If you go any place where there's a Walgreens in the United States, within sight is a CBS. They just let Walgreens do all the
opposite corner. They get one corner and CVS takes the other.
Yeah.
What a great savings.
Well,
that's pretty funny.
They're kind of collaborating, but not really.
Yeah, I get it.
But it's like, I think it's 47th Street in New York between 6th Avenue and 5th Avenue is the Diamond District, and on one block there's probably 50-60 diamond stores.
Oh yeah, right, the Diamond District.
And it makes total sense that they are collaborating, because they're making it easy for purchasers of diamond to go to one place and get what they want. If you don't have it, and probably they have referrals on the street, and then the diamonds can niche down that they're good for this type of diamond, and the guy across the street is good
consolidating.
Yeah.
That's an interesting, because you do that same thing with auto malls, and you see a lot of auto dealers are all together, and restaurant row where all the restaurants are.
In Toronto, the club music, the club music district was always there just south of south of, it's between
Wellington.
Well, it's kind of Richmond, Adelaide, and then it's the thing. And they just took over these big warehouses, and they became the places where you had live music. And at their height, I bet there were 20, 25 live music clubs, you know. And, you know, and people from Toronto didn't go there. People from Mississauga went there.
That's right. The New York equivalent of the bridge and tunnel people, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. When people lived...
The 905. Know, the 905 yeah, people.
The 905ers came in, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, just my team, I've got some team members who are almost 30 years with the company. And I can remember when they, first of all, they lived in North York. And then gradually they made their way down and they were living in the center city. You know, they were living down near the stadium and everything. And I said, so do you go to those clubs? You move down so you can go to those clubs. I said, oh, no, if you live in the inner city, you don't go to those clubs. It's nothing but a bunch of people from Scarborough and Etobicoke there. You know, they come from Whitby. They come from Iowa.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to hang out with people from the outer, you know, from the outer suburbs.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, it's so funny. People underestimate how much class snobism plays a part of everyday life and plays a part of what people. There's a great book by two professors, one from the University of Toronto, one from the University of I think it might be McGill in Montreal. And about 20 years ago, they wrote a book called Rebel Cell. And that is that, and he said that rebel controls the culture, but they don't control politics. Okay, so if you're rebelling, you don't control politics, but you control culture. Okay, so, Che Guevara is one of the most famous cultural symbols in the world. You know, you have a t-shirt with Che Guevara.
Yeah.
He was a complete loser, you know, politically. I mean, he was driven out of Cuba by Castro. Castro would have had him shot after a while. And then he was hunted down in South America and he was, you know, he was assassinated or whatever it was. But culturally, I mean, politically, he was a disaster, but culturally. And cultural things are a form of snobism. So, for example, you know, when Starbucks first started, you know, they created a niche for coffee of people who thought they were better than other people. You know, like you wouldn't drink Maxwell House if you were a Starbucks drinker.
Right.
And you look down on people, you know, who drank drip coffee. Well, I have lattes, I have espressos, you know, and everything like that.
Just those things that are delicious to say too, right?
Yeah.
The macchiato, the things that make you sound exotic. Yeah.
But once Starbucks, you know, is everywhere, Starbucks is part of a gas station. There must be some other way of differentiating yourself. You know, it's like Whole Foods. Once Amazon bought it, doesn't have the snob appeal that Whole Foods had before Amazon. You know, and I've noticed real difference. You know, I've been shopping in Whole Foods here in the city almost from the moment they got here. And I've noticed the variety has gone down. Service is still as good. I find them, you know, that they staff seems to be just as good. But they don't have posters up informing you how to be a better person anymore. You know, they used to have a lot of new age sort of
virtue signaling. Right, exactly.
Virtual signaling, and they don't do that anymore. It was kind of a relief because I was getting kind of annoyed with, maybe they do in certain places like San Francisco, or you know, Santa Monica or someplace like that, but not in Toronto.
Is there a Whole Foods by you, or is it the one in York?
No, it's downtown. It's right in Yorkville. You know where it is. It's right, I know. Right next to the Hazel.
Right above it. Yeah.
Yeah, Hazleton Lanes. And anyway, but, you know, it's, you go there, and, you know, it's great. Yeah. And they don't, one of the things, they don't really, really change where things are. And I really like that in the store, that they don't move things, you know, they don't ship departments or anything like that. You want to have it predictable. You can walk into the store and know exactly where to go.
Right.
Get something.
I wonder how long, what Amazon's plan is, whether that will be, well, things will be available on Instacart kind of thing now for delivery, or so making Whole Foods kind of accessible in Cloudlandia. Is that the
plan? Well, I think ultimately everything in the Amazon universe gets delivered, you know, gets delivered. And I noticed they have, I don't know, but they're kind of boxed in where they are in that particular store. There's not much, but you know, I don't check in with Jeff Bezos every week to see what he's got on his mind. But
But I wonder how you because you're.
Well, he wants to go to Mars anyway. You know, I mean, ultimately he's going to leave us. He's going to leave us. You know, and I noticed that Elon Musk. Just issued a document that if he gets to Mars first, it's going to be an independent planet. It's not going to blow on to Earth. So, and I said, go for it, Elon. Go for it. I said, go for it, Elon.
He's claiming Mars. Is that what's happening? I got it.
I said, go for it. Go for it. That's what I say.
Yeah. That's funny. Well, you're more power to him. I just thought of something, you know, as you think about Whole Foods and the Amazon connection as essentially equipping to bring Whole Foods into Cloudlandia, because it's been primarily a mainland place where it's kind of scarce and only in certain locations. But I'm wondering, my thought as I was, you were describing it, and I was thinking about coming into Cloudlandia with that, my immediate thought was about Pusateri's as an example.
Of which I also go to every Saturday. So I always go to Pusateri's. I get my hair cut. So I get my hair cut. I walk one block. I go to Pusateri's. And then my limousine driver picks me up, drops me off at Whole Foods, and waits for me. And then I go to the LCBO as a fourth stop if I do that, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, Pusateri's for one reason, Whole Foods for another. You know, it's kind of like there are certain things that Pusateri's has that are better and fresher than Whole Foods does, but they don't have variety.
Right. But premium. Yeah.
Yeah. And both of them are, I mean, you're paying extra at both stores.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether that is, you know, when you think about whether that's one of the type of businesses that will thrive and maintain on the mainland, as opposed to trying to make the migration to Cloudlandia. I think
probably we're having a different kind of conversation 7 months into the pandemic than we would have this time last year.
Yeah. Because what do you think? Do they deliver now too? I guess they have to, right?
Yeah, no, they deliver. The big thing, as you pointed out in previous broadcasts, is the last 5%, the final 100 yards. You know, because surrounding them, surrounding Whole Foods in Yorkville are people who live at various altitudes above the ground, you know, and it's harder. I think it's just harder to deal with condos and apartments than it is, you know, houses that are got a street address.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And yeah, it's yours.
Right there, front and center on their website. Shop, click, delivered. Explore over 5,000 items. Shopped and delivered by Pusateri's. To same day or next day delivery throughout the GTA. Wow.
Yeah,
so that's a good, they're going out to the 905 there.
See, just saying that kind of endangers their reputation.
Right, exactly. But it's really
905. You mean people in 905 can buy the same things I can?
Oh boy! Well, for people listening, we should say that if you live in Toronto, you have either a 416 or a 647 area code, or 416 being the original. And 905 means you are in the suburbs, or 519, even worse, you're further out.
Yeah, you probably have to cross a green belt to get to where you are.
To get to a 519, yeah, that's, but 905, you're in the GTA, which is, that's great.
Yeah.
It's so funny, isn't it, how we cordon things off, you know.
Yeah, well, these two authors, these two professors just updated their book last year, and they say that if you're not conscious, you're in competition, which is an interesting, because if you're not conscious, then the world is scarcity, okay? I mean, you have to, thinking the world of abundant requires quite a bit of letting your mind range out quite a ways from you. Okay.
Yeah.
The initial attitude, I think, probably in life is that things are scarce. Even if you're born into wealth, your parents' love is scarce. I mean, your parents' love can be scarce, you know. As a matter of fact, you may not see them very often. You may not see them very often, your parents, you know. They've got all sorts of nannies and everything. But what they say, there's three main areas where humans compete. The first one is in capability, which is completely unequal capability. The next one is status, also completely unequal. And the third one is consumption. And you vary your efforts at competition depending on what's working best right now. And so what the retailers, the big companies have gotten on is that if they go for the rebel sell, so for example, the National Basketball Association this year went for the rebel sell. In other words, it was Black Lives Matter, and that became almost more important than the sport itself. And, and that they would keep their connections with China because that was rebellion against Trump and everything like that. And their ratings dropped by 80%. The NBA finals were at best a third of what, and it was a complicated year and they had a short season, and everything like that. It was all happening near you. The entire National Basketball Association was
all in Orlando at the bubble.
Yeah. 20 miles from you. So they did a survey. There's this organization that does surveys where various entertainments are, where various, sports being part of entertainment. And they found that most people now consider the National Basketball Association a political activist group that sometimes plays basketball. And I don't think that's a good positioning. I don't think that's a good positioning statement.
Right. That's interesting. But, more and more true. I think that's, but you see, it's seeping into all of it.
I think,
too, right?
I kind of think that's a one way, that's a one way street that comes to a dead end. And
yeah.
I just think that's very, very, you probably have to back up, you know, you can't even turn around.
right. Back out of that one. Right.
Yeah. And, it's foolish. And, you know, it's why I don't, you know, on workshops, people ask me questions, what do you think about the election? I said, two predictions. It's on November 3rd, and I'm going to vote. And that's it.
There we go.
I don't say a thing, you know.
Right.
And even if everybody totally agreed with me how to vote, I wouldn't bring it up because it's you know, it's like a third rail of the subway, you know. Nothing good can come from touching that third rail, you know. It doesn't belong. This is why people want to have borders between the dimensions of their life.
Yes, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm coming into this so that we're all united in our joy or our pursuit of being better entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
That's really
or
what
better
that
or
about.
With
that's
you about. With better marketers, you know, better marketers.
Yeah.
I don't want anything seeping in from some other world.
Right.
Even my own world, I'm going to keep that outside of this world. You know, and my sense is that more and more individuals have to do that because the Cloudlandia doesn't do it for you. Everything can be instantly connected to anything else instantaneously more. Yeah. So you're going to have to develop the ability to create your own boundaries and borders between the different parts of your life.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's great. And that's, you know, there, and I wonder, no, I can't think of any situation where it would make sense to not do it that way.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, when you're talking to someone, are you seeing their world just as valid as you're seeing your world? I think this is what here's a Cloudlandia thing that I think your world is just as unique from the point from the center of your world, Dean. I think your world is just as unique as my world is from the center of my world.
Uh huh.
And
yeah.
My feeling, if you don't grant that to other people, you're going to find Cloudlandia a really annoying, aggravating. Well, it's going to be like Twitter and Facebook. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be like Twitter and Facebook. Everybody's got an opinion about other people's worlds. You know, everybody's got an opinion about other people's wording. You know, everybody. Yeah, I don't want to live in that environment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's
Twitter stock is down 20% over the last 2 weeks because they refused to allow any mention of a particular political event or development to appear to be transported by Twitter. And their stock is down 20%. And I bet they don't get it back. You know, like, what's the matter with you?
You telling me about the, you know, I mean, and that's one of the things that, when social media first started up here, you know, when you think about what Facebook and Twitter and, going Instagram, going that way, when it first started out, it was really about, I think Jack Dorsey, the guy that started Twitter, his whole thing was he just wanted it as a way to dispatch to your friends what was going on. He was in a taxi. And saw them, they had a dispatch system where one person could write a message and dispatch to all the other taxi drivers. And he thought, well, that would be neat to have with your among your friend group to be able to say, hey, I'm heading over to MacGuffin's or whatever. And that's what it became. I don't think there was any way to see that it would become sort of a de facto free press in a way, right?
Well,
that became
the other beacon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm coming. So here's a case. I'm coming to Florida and I'm going to be near Bayou, Dean. And you say, well, while you're down here, I've got almost like an extra suite in my house. Why don't you and Deb stay the extra suite? And we say, oh, that'd be great. And we come down, but I bring all my siblings with me. Babs brings all her siblings, and they bring all their children, and then all of our relatives. And that's what social media has done. You wanted one person to come into your world, but they brought everybody else that they knew into your world.
Wow, exactly. Yeah, that's what's happening, I guess, with Twitter, right? I mean, all of a sudden, everybody.
Well, once you've opened it up, there's no governor on how much can come in, you know.
Right. Yeah.
You not only get the person, but you get everything the person has been connected to for the last 50 years, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Yeah, well, I don't want that part of the person, you know, and everything like that, you know. But I think it's probably printing was, I mean, I think there's just a lot of, you know, people live with it for a while. And then they say, for example, there's still a thing called local media in the United States. So there's local newspapers, neighborhood newspapers. Like we have two in the beaches where we live. There's two mm-hmm. publications that come out. They have advertising in them,
yeah.
You know, and I'm
a
sure
weekly, yeah.
I'm sure this is not unusual if you go right, especially because Toronto, as one person, Dean Jackson, knows better than others, they're discrete neighborhoods. And, each of these neighborhoods, there might be 35 or 40 of them, they have kind of a unique character, and the city's
yeah.
done a good job of allowing them to do this. So the Trump campaign, looking at what happened to them in 16 with the mainstream media and Silicon Valley, has spent the last 4 years getting to know all these local newspapers. And they'll do interviews like imagine this, Trump does an exclusive interview with the community in the beaches. He comes to the beaches and he does an interview. Do you think people would read that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So what and then not all of them, I mean, they're not doing this in downtown San Francisco. They're not doing it. So they just eliminate anywhere where they know they don't have a chance politically. And
yeah.
then they decide, they've identified the key swing states and then the key swing communities. And they've spent the last 4 years just absolutely cultivating these people, you know,
yeah.
and everything like that. And he had, they had something like, and then they had certain people, spokespeople that went out, you know, who kind of represented that group, and they'd come out and they would work yeah. it continually and talk back and, you know, report back and how it was. So none of this came to the awareness of the people, you know, who were trying to defeat. None of them understood that this was happening. This has just been revealed this last week. It's been revealed. And they put $500 million into this.
Really? Who did? The
Trump campaign. Trump campaign put $500 million into developing. They had 20, 30,000 people who were out there for 4 years developing these local newspapers.
Community. Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
These online newspapers. Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah.
The interesting thing is, if you think you've got one universe wrapped up, there may be another universe that you're ignoring. And
right.
It may act. And, you know, So my sense is that humans are infinitely unpredictable and infinitely unpredictable. You say you can't do this. And I was just reading an article about this young guy from Germany. Do you remember this was around 1987, 88, this young German, he had a pilot's license and he had the access to a Cessna. And he flew from Sweden to downtown Moscow. He actually landed his plane in downtown Moscow. He landed it pretty close to Red Square.
Uh-huh.
And he went right through the entire Soviet defense system with a Cessna. And they send jets out to try to fly next to him, but they couldn't do anything because you can't fly a jet that slowly.
Oh, yeah, right. Frustrating. <'Cause> he's well, there he is. Zoom. Hey, you, zoom.
And all he wanted to do was deliver a message to Secretary Gorbachev that, you know, the people from the West would like to have more contact with the people from the East. And he said, my flight is sort of a symbol of that.
And that came is so internet. Funny.
Yeah. Everything. And I said, everybody who planned the Soviet defense system going back 30, 40 years, they didn't take this particular situation into account.
Right. Oh, my goodness. That is hilarious. They can't slow down.
I've downloaded it because it's just a really interesting article of unpredictable humans. You know, what? He had a new capability. He had just gotten his flyer's license, and he told his mother he was just going to do some flying in northern Germany, might go to Sweden, might go someplace else. But he had to get his hours in. And he said, he was good enough that he had his personal license so he could fly solo. And then he planned it all out, and he removed everything from the plane and put in a lot of extra gasoline, and he figured out Moscow. And he says, probably if I can get there and they don't kill me, he says, they'll probably give me enough gas to fly back. Or I can buy it.
Just to get out of their hair.
And then he said, I won't decide to fly to Moscow until I've taken off from Sweden. And he says, a half hour into the flight, I'll decide whether I want to fly to Moscow or not. So he did that, and he was in the air. So he had committed himself to an activity, and then he would either fly back to Germany or he'd fly to Moscow. And he says, you know, I've gone through all this. I might as well try it.
Man, that's what a great story. That's awesome.
But it's such a great story because
that sounds like what a great movie that would make, actually.
Yeah. But there's just nothing in the way that, you know, defense planners and the military and the political thing would ever in a million years dream up an individual would have an aspiration like this. And then he had a capability. So, you know, I mean, he had an aspiration. He was an unpredictable consumer with a new capability. He had vision, he had capability, and he had reach.
That's the VCR formula in action.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. I love it. Well, I will look forward to reading that article.
Yeah. I'll send it to you right afterwards. And I had been very aware of it when it happened. But, you know, when it happened, there was still a Soviet Union. Okay. And so here we are. We're now 33 years since the situation and the Soviet Union has collapsed. And they're using that as a sign that, the under theme of the article is that the Soviets were getting really sloppy and things were, you know, kind of falling apart and everything like that But they might have shot him down 5 minutes after he got into Soviet territory, and you would never heard anything about it. So
yeah, right. You know,
I mean, yeah.
I love it. And it
I think you have to be slightly on the spectrum to do this.
Yes. I agree.
They give a lot of his thinking. He's still alive. You know, he's in his 60s now, 50s or 60s now, and he's still alive. And so they've interviewed him a lot. And he says, well, you know, he said, but you can kind of tell he's got like a, he's kind of like a single focus person. You know, he's not a person. You know, he never talks about what my family's going to think about this, what my friends are going to think of. It never that comes into it. You see, so he's
it's
kind
all
of a guy.
Outcomes.
He just locks on, and he said he was really scared. You know, he thought he could be killed at any moment, but he said he kept, you know, and they checked him out, and there was a whole series of weird things that day, which gave him luck was on his side. There was low cloud cover, and so he could fly down around 1,000 feet, and he couldn't be picked up. And one of the things I found out that there was this, you know, altitude with cloud conditions where Soviet detective technology didn't pick up on it, and everything. CIA was very interested in his trip.
Oh my! Yeah, right. We figured we got the loophole. That's
I'm sure
amazing.
They did. I'm sure they did interviews.
Yeah, right.
Oh yeah, that's really interesting. They're blind here. They're blind here. And the Soviets were out of money by that time. I mean, they probably couldn't even correct the deficiencies. So I don't know if they were still shooting people in, by the late 80s. You know.
Oh man, that's something.
Yeah. But it's a great story. I'll send it to you because it's got a lot of insight into if an individual just decides to do something in today's world. That's like your guy and you know the two teenagers in Amsterdam and Georgia who just decided to do something. There's a lot of help out there if you have commitment and courage. There's a lot of capability that will make you confident if you take the step as an individual.
I love it. Well, Dan,
well,
you know, we mess around.
Another six Jacksons have gone by, but
I'm still saving my allotment here, my extra Jacksons. I'm saving them.
But you have to do it before April because they
I will. Yeah. I know I'm aware of that. Yes.
They have a shelf life.
Yes. They have a shelf life. Definitely gonna use them by then.
Yeah.
That's funny. Okay, Dan. Well, I will
I'll check in next week. I'm good. I mean, this pandemic thing is pretty good for podcasting.
It really is. Next week we'll be at annual event. Yes, so we won't be able
doesn't
to
mean
the
we
following
can.
Week for sure.
It doesn't mean we can't talk to each other at the annual
That's
event.
That's true. That's exactly
okay.
true. Okay.
All right.
Bye, Dan.
Bye.